Well, hello everyone. Welcome to the third quarter 2024 Beacon Church Collaborative Zoom meeting. Today's date is September the 5th, 2024. And we have the great pleasure and honor to have our speaker, Bill Gavinta, to present to us today. His topic will be inclusive faith, discussing the common challenges churches encounter in ministry with people with disabilities. And so just a little bit about Bill. So he's an author, speaker, trainer, and consultant, primarily in the arena of faith and disability. He is the founder and director emeritus of
Emeritus,
the
yep.
Summer Institute of Theology and Disability. And he's the former president of the Disability Ministry Network, whom he helped to organize and get that network established. And that's how I know Bill as well. And of course, as I mentioned, he will be our featured speaker on October the 17th and the 18th for our in-person conference. So I hope you will join us for that as well. And with that introduction, Bill, I'm handing it over to you and letting you take control of this hour.
Well, it's really good to see faces and some names. I've seen a few of your names on emails, and I want to thank you for that. It's a delight to be here. I will say that Jackie gave me an impossible task for this webinar, which was that she wanted me to discuss, all right, the five or six challenges that congregations face in this arena, and the major ones. And part of it I said was, wait a minute, for me, I want to know what you guys are facing, what the challenges that you have faced yourself. And that was one of the reasons for putting out a question, an email out to you all who might come to say, what are you dealing with and so on. And we're going to start off with those in just a minute. And start off with your responses to those. And because by time we get finished dealing with what your questions, we will have covered most of what I was going to cover anyway, which was that I'd like you to feel free to raise a hand. You can do it electronically, but you also probably better do it this way because I'm probably more likely to pick it up. Let me just say, I'm an American Baptist ordained clergyman. I've been working in this arena for more than 40 years now. It became my call and place during a year of clinical pastoral education out after seminary. And I've gone from being in a chaplain in one of the old large residential institutions to a smaller one that worked a lot with community congregations, and then worked for a statewide DD council in Georgia. And then to the University Center of Excellence in New Jersey, where I was for about 20 years. So I've worn hats on both the secular and religious side of services and supports for people with disabilities. And if anything, I would say my role has been to try to be, you use a word which you all have already captured, to be a bridge between those worlds, between the secular and faith worlds, and help those worlds to understand each other better and to work with each other better. I sometimes call myself a deinstitutionalized chaplain, in the sense that most of the institutions that those large old whole institutions are not around anymore, thankfully, because it was really a pretty terrible place. But the question has still become, as people are now in the community, how do we help people to really feel like they're part of the community in which they live, not just happening to live there. So I ask for you some questions. I also suggested that you take a look at Believing, Belonging, Becoming. Did you some of you have a chance to do that?
I did.
Jackie
Hey,
did.
yeah.
Natalie did. Okay. I'm then if it, what I'm going to suggest to the rest of you is take a look at that sometime. And because I think as you work with congregations and even in your own congregations, it's a what it is really four short stories of inclusion in faith communities. It was not done by a religious group. It was done by, in fact, a developmental disabilities council in Wisconsin, because they saw the importance of community inclusion and faith inclusion for people with disabilities a number of years ago. And they did these four short stories. Two of them are about kids, and two of them are about adults. And I think it's a very What's neat about it is that it's 11 minutes. It's a very good way to introduce the whole area to a group of people who may not have, who you're trying to talk about what you're getting at and put some names and faces on it. And it also is a good way of thinking about, okay, could we do this? Is what would we need to do something like this? Is this the kind of thing we want to do? And it's, I think it's really pretty powerful little video. It's not telling you how to do it. It's sharing stories. And that, I think, is one of the most important things in this whole area of ministry, is people sharing stories with each other about things that have happened, things that we've learned, things that people with disabilities taught us, their families have taught us, those unexpected moments of revelation and grace, I think, that happen here, at least to me, kind of almost without fail, over and over again, as we try to think about how do we help people to become part of all of God's people. So let me start then, because I ask you, let me start with some of what you said. Okay, can you see this? All right, and legible, I hope, because I could. Anyway, so these some of
Bill,
you are going to
could you
recognize
make it a
your
little
voice.
bigger? Bill, could
Yeah,
you
make it a little bit
make it a
bigger.
little bigger, please?
Yeah, let me see if I could do that. Hold on a minute. Layout, view, zoom. How's
Oh,
that?
good. Thank you.
All right, questions and things that people ask. I mean, if I was if you had said, what are the kind of five or six key areas these days, I would say some of the things that you all have asked about. One of them is about how congregations work along with agencies and other people who are working with people with disabilities, because there's a lot of there are gaps there that need to be, that collaboration there is not easy at times. How are congregations dealing with people with autism and the kind of variety of the huge number of things that have begun to happen in that arena? Some of you asked questions also about families. And then there were some other questions that just came in from one of you that I just got forwarded to me, which we're going to deal with a bit later on. But several of you talked about, what about an adult who has significant neurodivergence, somebody who's has autism? That person may not be self-aware, but and some one of you said, I'm really interested in that and how we connect that to Catholic social teaching, with which you were familiar. This is an, I think, an arena that a whole lot has been done on in the last 10 years or so, in faith communities, and the resources around it really nowadays are just pretty amazing. I think it, as like with so many of these things, it has to do with one, has to do with getting to know a person with autism, the person who may be in your congregation or their family, getting to know them pretty well. It doesn't mean everybody's got to get to know that person, but one or two people need to get to know that person well and begin to build a relationship, so that you get to a point where that you begin to ask for and ask that person, what are some ways that we can help them be more involved in the congregation in ways that they would like to be. One of the resources that we'll put up here is a website on grief and loss for adults with autism. It was part of a project that I was part of a few years ago. And in the development of that site, one of the things we constantly heard from people with autism was, don't assume we don't understand. Don't assume we don't understand. We may not be able to show it, but much better to assume competence and that they understand without their knowing how to respond necessarily. Because that's, as you know, the issues for people with autism are more about sensory and data and feeling overload, and then not knowing how to to stay in control, to be able to respond to people in more in ways that we consider to be more appropriate. And then they're having to deal with how do I manage all this that's going on? Part of the thing is, becoming aware of situations in which a person with autism feels pretty comfortable and feels like they can talk, when that may need to be a quieter place rather than a big noisy coffee hour or something like that. But I think the first thing to do is to make assumptions that one, that they understand more than they might think about. And secondly, that they might have questions, and that they really would want to have relationships, but they're not sure how to do it, not sure how to go about it. So you really have to learn, I think, not to say, well, just get into our world, this is what we do, but to have people, a couple people who are really willing to get into their world, so to speak, and learn the ways in which they communicate, what's important to them, and what are the best ways and places where they can build some relationships where they can ask you questions and you can share things with them and can ask things like, well, would you like to learn how to do this? And we can help, or I can help you with that, to begin those relationships of trust where people, they can begin to feel like they're not so overwhelmed by the task or what they see in front of them. And some of the resources that deal with some of this, I think, this is just a small sample of what's out there. And I'm going to send all this to Jackie, so you can send it on to everybody who's here today. We did a booklet in New Jersey about 10 years ago called Autism and Faith, A Journey into Community. And it was specifically because a lot of autistic families and parents were feeling like they were not getting much welcome or response when they went to congregations. But so much has happened since then in terms of, more common awareness of people about autism. And I would say, I think that one of the measures of that, what's happened, is that in fact, people with autism, in fact, a lot of people with autism would say, I'm not a person with autism, I'm autistic, just call me autistic. The person first language maybe doesn't apply to me. The autism has become a proud label, like saying I am black or I am something else. And that in fact many people have begun to see huge gifts and skills that numbers of people, not everybody on the autism spectrum, can have. Just like none of us on our quote typical spectrum have huge amounts of gifts or skills. We all have varied abilities. So, but a lot has changed about that. But this is an online booklet. You can copy it down, print it out. It's a good thing for short articles to begin with. Barbara Newman was a person in Michigan who has written two books, one, Autism in the Church, and another second one, a really short and accessible book called Accessible Gospel Inclusive Worship. And this was more about how do we get to the core of what worship is, and how do we help to make it inclusive for people who maybe communicate or act in different ways, or ways that are not so typical for the people maybe in that congregation. And one of the things that we've got to remember is that when a person with an adult with an intellectual disability or an adult with autism or somebody comes into a congregation and are not sure what to do, and we think, oh, it's because her disability, they don't know what to do. Well, the r real reason probably is they haven't had the years of practice we have had, of being able to go and do and be part of something and learn how to do it after time. Excuse me for a minute. I am getting over a cold, so and part of that's what the in the world of autism, what they call that, this unwritten unspoken social expectations are called the hidden curriculum. It's like, what's the hidden curriculum in every congregation? Because it's all different, even between different churches and between different denominations. One of the ways to experience that yourself is to think about a time you may have gone to a church or a faith community that's very different from your own, and you didn't know what to do or what to say or when to move, so on. I'm a Southern Baptist. First time I went to a Catholic mass, I was really liturgically disabled. I just did not know what to do, when and where. And people need time and ways to learn how to practice. And in fact, maybe some of what can happen with a person is that some of that practice can happen outside of the church service, to have somebody go through and learn what we do. Here's what we do in different ways. And if a lot of the good work that's been done with people with autism is breaking task up into manageable tasks and manageable steps, and then learning that those kind of one by one. But Barbara Newman's book, there's also now in Aberdeen, at University of Aberdeen, a Center for the Study of Autism and Christian Community, with Leon von Ohman is one of the key staff people there. There's a New Testament scholar at Aberdeen who also has autism, who's written a book on the autism in the Bible and the church. Both great people, really interesting people. And I've given you the link there, and I'm going to and if you go to the next thing, Baylor had him come to do a lecture this last spring, and you can see the lectures that he did there. You could have a look at him. Leon's done some really interesting and things, and I mean, I think about it, his talk, and he was saying, he said, one of his learnings was from somebody with autism was, you can make up your mind to say, oh, I think I'm going to go to church today, and go. And this woman said, for us, it's no such easy thing. It's no such easy thing, because it's got to, I've got to get all prepared. I've got to know what's going on. How do I make sure feel like I'm in control of it, and some things. But those are, I would really suggest that resource from you. And then there's the Autism and Grief website here that give you a chance to look at that and some of the kind of key, and there are sections in there for clergy as well. But there's some key things about how do you deal with, help a person with autism deal with grief. Well, are key things about relating to people with autism, period, which is, again, giving people space, learning how to get into their world, communicate in the ways that they do, recognize their needs, what kinds of things give them comfort and strength, help them gradually become feel more comfortable about doing things that are different, and always having kind of optional plans in case they begin to feel overwhelmed. But you may know, and I hope you do, because I've just, my life has been tremendously enriched by a number of adults with autism in the last few years, who are doing some really interesting things, and I think being parts of faith, and also including that and being part of faith communities. Now, makes the second issue that some of you raised was about developing relationships with caregivers and care providers. One of the questions was about, we visit to some of the local family care homes, but it's been hard to overcome the barriers that we found by establishing a relationship with the care home that's owned by a big provider. It's been easier. This person, one of you said, if the home was individually owned, we found one caregiver who was very receptive to visits from our people and had ideas, but unpredictable schedules for caregivers and for church members, it's been really hard to establish any momentum beyond some special events like gift giving events or the Thanksgiving events or maybe a party or the kind of events that you all with Bridge have helped to do in other things. That our plan was to have members begin to visit people at homes, and we're trying to figure out ways to get started. We need to figure out how to communicate to the house manager and caregivers that we are there for them as well as the residents. and that this is purely an attempt to reach out to members of our community who might feel lonely and would appreciate some new friends to add a little variety to their lives. There's some key words in that last paragraph. And if this bridge is helping to facilitate and helping you all develop some relationships with the group homes or the agencies running those homes, it's an area where the relation you've got to build a relationship with the home and with the staff, or with the agency as well as with the individuals. I wish it was easier, but it's not. And some of the reasons are that there's so much turnover in direct care staff in some of those homes that just about the time somebody you might get to know somebody and be working with them and have established a relationship with somebody who's helpful, they might end up leaving. There's also still lots of suspicion in the disability world about what church people are after, given some of the experiences that people have had in years past, where all kind that stay out there in the public. Verbal in the verbal tradition, so to speak, oral tradition about there, and most of the staff who work in these homes, at least in New Jersey, and I wouldn't be surprised in Seattle, are people who are immigrants or people who are not very well connected themselves in terms of their own communities, and so. The point about trying to reach out to the staff as well is just so crucial to really see them as an ally, potential ally. And if you're getting to introduce yourself to the home or to the agency, is to figure out a way to talk, someplace to talk, go to them. Rather than expecting them to come to you, to the agents, you might need to start at the agency that oversees the group homes and some of the people and see where to, because people are going to want to know who you are and trust who you are and say, this is who we are. And that we know that you all have a home near us. And we're interested simply in befriending some of the people who were there, getting to know them, and perhaps there are things that we could help out with. And part of the question would be, you would be helping them to practice what they preach. And hear what I say, because all agencies say that our job is to help people become parts of communities, that our job is to help people become part of the community in which they live, to live in the community. But so many agencies don't have enough staff or enough ways to really help do that. And so one of the things you could be helping them with would be simply to say, we're here. Are there things that you all are trying to do to help the people who live in your home get more involved in the local community? Maybe they've already had some things that they have tried and they haven't had any. Maybe they needed some additional help or some more hands to go with them, like to go try an activity together. And maybe that's where you say, well, let us come and join you in that and begin to get to know people rather than necessarily you're putting on the event. Or to be able to say, have you paid in, have, do you know if any of them would be interested in being part of a faith community or coming in just testing and visiting? We're not, if they'd like to come, we'd be glad to even have the home or have you come over to the church, like come over to Dan's church, not on Sunday, but sometime during the week. So somebody can show them around, see what goes on at the church, show where the bathrooms are, get people oriented a bit and a little familiar with the environment, and get them to and answer questions that people might have about what it means to come to church there. And work with then again the individuals themselves around their preferences and their choices. My guess is that most of those All of those agencies are supposed to do what are called person-centered plans with the people they support, which is trying to figure out what those folks want, not just what they need. What are some of their dreams? I mean, the core question for in-person-centered planning is what's important to somebody as well as is what's important for them. And because the for them is a kind of caregiver question, what's important to somebody is what really gets them excited. What are their interests? What are their passions? And if you could, and are they, would they be interested in going to the church, or church is having a cleanup day, come over and helping us, or, try to find out, try to work with, find somebody who can get to know you guys and begin to trust a bit, and then begin to work with, could we meet some of the people? What are some things that you all are doing that maybe we could help out with, or here's some ideas we have, and let it go from there. And all the time, kind of model what is it that the individuals themselves are interested in? Not what are the staff telling them to do, but what are the individuals interested in doing? And how can we help them live out maybe some of their hopes or choices about being able to do more out in the community, no matter what that might be? So it could be around those, and I'll talk more about that in the, it'll be part of the PowerPoint later on. But I've also got, I've got a few things that the Baylor place has got some. I've got a few connections with some webinars that have been webinars about building relationships between churches and agencies and group homes and kind of trying to overcome barriers on both sides. And I hope that those might be helpful. And it's important to know that that you can, that there have also been people in the service world writing and working on this in terms of the importance of paying attention to the spirituality of the people whom they support. And some of those, one of them is this frontline initiative, spirituality honoring the heart and call of direct support. Frontline Initiative is a newsletter for direct support workers. This was done a number of years ago. There are other resources out there now. And a guy named Tom Hoeksema, who taught at Calvin College, wrote a really wonderful paper that if you're working with an agency is a good place to start. And you can just put it, and I'll get this to Jackie. You can just put this in Google and download it. He was asked to come into a group home that was sued by a family because they felt like a church was trying to, that felt like a staff person was trying to proselytize the people who live there. All right. This is the kind of thing that people are afraid of. When people in agencies say, we can't talk to you church folks because we're funded by the state and we church state separation. Well, that's not right. That's not true. You can certainly talk about spirituality and people's preferences and helping people to be involved and so on. You can't proselytize. And what Tom did went into that situation and worked out kind of a way of understanding what the role of the staff and the home and other people would be around protecting religious freedom and honoring people's choices in this. And these are the kind of tools that you could have that carry with you to talk with some of the agencies and some of the staff involved, because they might not even know about those as well. Pardon another cough.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. And then Natalie, ask a wonderful question about what do you do with families who are in denial or kind of or of a diagnosis or a problem? And that is, I think, a hugely difficult and not easy question. And it could be a person, not, it could be a person that may be acquiring a disability in some kind of way or another. I think there was a question sort of about that in the last person who sent in some things to Jackie. I think this is a place where you've got to really cause for, again, the importance of relationships and beginning to have one or two people try to make it a point to get to know somebody and to then to be able to say and to focus first not on what the need or the problem is, but to focus on what are the things that they would like to be doing in the faith community. Are there, th is there, would they like to be doing more? Is there some way, are there ways in which a faith community might be more supportive than you have been? They might have been reluctant to ask. for that kind of thing. You know, most of us are not very good at asking for help. That's what one of the things this whole arena teaches us, and we need to be careful that we don't make it just people with disabilities who have to do the asking. I think we've got to help model that. Learning how to model that as Christians is really important. And the other thing is to think about what people's gifts are, their strengths, and what do they bring, and what they like to contribute to the life of the congregation. Because there may be ways in which I think if you're working with a family that's got a kid and you've got a Sunday school teacher who's really worried about this, you really want to make sure that people are talking with the family and the child and say, with a kind of loving sense that says, doesn't mean you accept everything that happens that goes on, but you've got to say, here are gifts we see. We'll see these things. We're going to try to work on those kinds of things. And then if after you've gotten to know somebody, are there ways that needs that are coming up? Are there ways to become an ally with the parent, maybe in addressing the problems that are there? If there's a denial going on, either in an individual or a family, that denial is serving some kind of function for them. It may not be right, but it's serving some kind of function. Even perhaps that they're like a family could be just totally frazzled and not know what to do and scared to death that something might be wrong and are trying to pretend that things are okay when they may not be. Or if it's with an individual who's, you all probably had this experience and you may have had it with yourself. As we say, no, I really don't. I'm not having the problems I think I really have, and some, but other people are beginning to notice that you are. We all have this. There's all this need to about our image and what we want people to see in people, and we've got to really come at this, I think, from that kind of perspective, that gets to know people, that affirms the good things that people we see and the strengths, and then ask about ways that we can support them in ways that they want and need support, perhaps, or find support that maybe they that we if we can't provide it. But it's got to come out of our sense of relationship, and trust has got to happen, because just attacking the denial and saying you're in denial of this, it might be much better to try to find another family who's got a kid with the same kinds of issues and say, hey, can you help me with this? Or could you say, I've got a fa we know a family who's got a boy who does some of the same things we see your son doing. I wonder if you'd like to talk with them about what they've been trying to do. But they may be working with a teacher. The teacher may be working on this, so there may be allies out there, but there's some need that's keeping some people from responding in that kind of way. So this was just related to the qu question you all had about falls at the somebody with falling at the church. He rides an access bus, comes along without a caregiver. He's receptive to sitting in a chair, accepts help from those sitting near him. He doesn't always want to use his cane, and he's fallen standing to participate in worship elements. I think here the question would be again, one or two people, two or th one or two, three people, not, maybe not the whole congregation, but if need be, the whole educating the rest of the congregation to say, knowing this person, longtime member, you know them, but one or two or three people that he can begin to feel really comfortable with, and who will maybe take turns sitting near him, alongside and being there just to help out. Because if this person has been there for a long time and is determined, he wants to stand up when it's time to stand up, then it's kind of hard to say no to somebody who's been there at the church and been doing that for years and years. But to say, hey, let us help you in the ways that we need to. We don't want to interfere. We don't want to keep you from doing anything. And it's really important that you're here. But it's also really important to us that you don't fall, and that we have we don't do something that makes you worse, that makes it worse for you. And I think one of the recognitions in this area is the importance of at times setting boundaries on things and recognizing that no, you can't do everything, and that there's some boundaries about things that you can't do. The AAID Religion Group had a whole webinar, a series of webinars on that a few years ago about how do we learn to say no and set appropriate boundaries within congregations. Suggestions for engaging our nonverbal friends in worship and fellowship before and afterwards. If you put the church bulletin maybe in picture form, and or some not just large print, but you could you do a picture form of what happens in the bulletin so that they could follow along and see the pictures with that? You'd be like having a on a kind of on a regular basis. You wouldn't have to do it every Sunday, but anything using pictures, touch, sound. Lots of churches are doing fidget bags now for kids who may be nonverbal, but are maybe very verbal, and but you want them to be part of the service, but you don't want them to interrupt things. We are doing, in fact, a project, and I could send you a thing that a chaplain did in New Jersey a number of years ago about multi-sensory ways of worship. So the question is for all of us is how do we use all of our senses in worship, and how do we help worship to become, excuse me, more inclusive and supportive of people who are not people of the heard and spoken word, or they may hear it, but it's really hard for them to speak. But then the questions there would be to say, how do they communicate in other ways? Or do they use picture boards? Do they use other kinds of things? And can some of us learn how to use some of that and maybe integrate that? Again, that has to do with Presbyterianism being a heady religion. And and to do things decently and in order, and sometimes that gets challenged in these settings. But I think it also we're doing a research project right now with a number of different churches and talking to clergy about and people and church leaders about what are the kinds of multi-sensory things you do already to enhance your worship services. And have any of those come out of trying to include a person with a disability who can't communicate through one sense, but we know can communicate through using other senses that we have. And we're beginning to get, and just to find out things that, because we think some churches are doing creative things that have nothing to do with including people who can't read or who are nonverbal, but has to do with just trying to make the service more participatory for everybody at multiple levels, just so you're doing more than participating by singing and listening and reading. What are ways of movement? What are ways of sound, smell, sight? Lots of congregations using pictures and pictorial things. We can share some resources about that. Handling transportation is one of the bugaboos, and the hardest if there's any story I've heard so many times is access bus schedules are almost impossible to control. And if you're working with an agency and you want some of the people, they say, well, we'd love for people to come, and they'd love to come, but we don't have a staff person to send them. That's where you've got to develop a relationship with the agency to figure out how to cut that Gordian knot, because they say you want people to be in the community. In my community, then I'd say, you want to come to church? I'll come by and pick you up. And they say, no, I'm sorry, we can't let you do that, because we don't know who you are yet. We haven't developed a relationship of trust. You're not an official volunteer. You haven't had a background check. I mean, those are, but some agencies have begun to crack that nut, but it comes out of, again, a trusting relationship of getting to work with people over time on this. All right, I've spent 45 minutes responding to some of your questions. Let me give a break here. And are there things that you would like to respond to, or something that raised some further questions? And is this on target?
Yeah, Bill, thank you. I appreciate all this. And yeah, very much on target for issues that we have in our church and just how much we're enjoying working with our folks with disabilities, but also trying to accommodate. I back to the transportation question, because that actually was my question. We often find that we will have to wait quite a while after church, and that's okay, but when it becomes sort of a regular thing, it's hard to do that, to stay there with the caregiver, and or often the one person is alone, the caregiver doesn't come with him. And you know, we don't want to just leave him there. We can't. And he lives far enough away that it would be hard to have somebody pick him up. He's not like just down the street, because we do that with some other members. Yeah.
I would see if anybody else has got that same kind of issue, but I would also say
I can speak to that somewhat, having been, I don't want to use the word victim too much, but let's just say I've been on the wrong end of that, where, most churches have or should have a protocol in place by which two people are, two able-bodied people are, waiting with a disabled or otherwise vulnerable person, while, let's say, their transport is trying to get here. Often, that's not very consistent because, maybe one of those two people has some place to go or somewhere to be. And it doesn't always happen in that way. I understand where this person is coming from here, but my point is that, there are protocols in place for, some oddball scenarios where that might happen. And I can recall an incident about 2 months ago where, I mean, it was Father's Day, for crying out loud, and for whatever reason, their scheduling department was short-staffed, and all these things happen. I was supposed to get out of the service at like, 12:15, and it ended up being an additional 2 hours later.
I, well, Nathan, what are you? I think the question is, what are we? What are the possibilities in terms of like the if your church, if the person is supported by an agency, then certainly talking with them about this and about the about this being an issue, and beginning to put heads together and see if there's some. Some creative ideas might begin to emerge, or if it usually doesn't happen, could there be a couple of people around who might volunteer to say, for those emergency times when it does, I can't do it on a regular basis, but I might for then. I don't know, but putting heads together and figuring out what's doable and also what's
Yeah, what's
what keeps
doable within
safety
reason,
involved.
I guess.
Yeah, what helps people keep safe, but you also there's a phrase in the disability world called the dignity of risk, that says we can't protect people from everything, but the question is we are liable for some things, we're not for others, but some person might say, well, I'm going to be perfectly okay by myself here. You don't have to worry about me. And we might say, I'm not sure we could do that. It might be our issue, but you got to talk about that with the people involved, to make sure that that's something people can begin to feel comfortable with. And that's got to come out of relationship and knowing each other.
Go ahead, Jessica.
Yeah, so access is a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage those of you, and this may come off really harsh. I apologize, But I encourage all of you who don't use Access and who have never used Access before and see it as a burden for you to use this as a moment of empathy. Because this is one of your chances where you can step into our lives. This is a ongoing daily. We never know when we're going to be picked up. We never know if. We never know how long that trip's going to be. We never know how many bumps that are going to go over and be thrown out of our seat. This is our daily existence. And I know that those awkward pickup drop-offs and you just want to leave us stranded. And so maybe frame it as this is a time to show solidarity, because it's not going to be changing. I mean, your choice is have disabled people there and understand that part of that is having the access challenges, or it's saying you guys are too difficult and we don't want that. Which may be a choice you make, and I would discourage that and say this may be a moment where we can work it into our schedule to step up and say this is a time in solidarity. Those times in the bathroom that are super slow, those times waiting for appointments, those times waiting for access, those times can be holy times that relationships are developed. It doesn't have to be times that are wasted, but this is when you say, we give it, we choose to be there in the hardness of your life.
I actually do have one question, and it speaks to a point that, you know, I was listening in and you've already spoken to, but how exactly do you introduce yourself as a volunteer or a representative of a church to, let's say a group home where, you know, religion is not exactly welcome, you know?
Well, don't assume it's not welcome first. Assume maybe, first of all, they don't know what to do with it. And they don't have any, they have very few positive images. So you also want to have some good stories, places to say, you know, where people who really are doing, for whom that's a really important part of their lives. And then secondly, I think it's, don't do it alone, do it with a group of people, from the church. So you're not seen as a preacher walking the streets, determined to find a congregation, and then to begin to say again, we know you're here. Do people get to be part of the community? We're around. We'd love to get to know you. There may be things that we can help you with. Just to even say, we may be things that we can help you with. I'll tell you, yeah. There was a church, one of my favorite stories. It was a church in Madison, Wisconsin, or near Madison, that had a group home open fairly near to them. And the group home said, we'd like to call the church and said, could you all perhaps think about getting involved with us? So the church did what all churches do. They put a bulletin, a notice in the bulletin, and said, we're going to have a meeting after church on Sunday. There's been a new group home open near us, and we're going to talk about things that we might be able to do with them. Guess how many people came?
Zero.
Zero. You got it right. And they went back to the drawing board and said, oops, that didn't work. So let's think about something. So some of them went to the home, got to know the guys, and got to know the people who lived there a bit, and found out, lo and behold, that a bunch of the guys were, this is Madison, Wisconsin, Green Bay Packer fans. And so about a month later or so, they said, we're going to have a meeting after church. We're thinking about starting a church group to watch Green Bay Packer games together at a men's group. And how many people might be interested in doing something like that? You know how many people came? 40 came afterwards. And they
Mm-hmm.
said, and by the way, we're going to do this, but we're also going to include some guys who never get to go to, who never have anybody to watch Green Bay Packer fans with, or never get to go to the bar, or never get to go to the games. This is probably going to be the most crucial thing that I would have was going to say to you in the PowerPoint afterwards. And it goes back to Natalie's point about not recognizing gifts in your chat about how do we recognize gifts and strengths and that people have. Is because what they could then do was they used a common interest, a shared interest, a gift that people had. All of a sudden, what happened with those guys was to essentially to say, you took this, found this shared interest between a person with a disability and without a disability, and you begin, that becomes the point around which you begin to get to know somebody. It's the same thing we do on a plane talking to a stranger. You start a conversation and try to find the shared points of interest, and then you begin to talk about that, and that begins to be a doorway that opens up to other people. It's not that different, except it would be even more similar if a person sitting next to on a plane was much different, quote, different, we thought, than we are, when in fact there might be very.
But you also don't want to sit next to, what I'm going to call a holy roller. I've had the unfortunate experience of that where, religion is not only the center of their world, but it's way more than just living and breathing it. It's their life.
Yeah.
Some kinds of exhaustive behavior can be religious, yes.
It is. So we've got about another 5 minutes or so, and our hour will be up. But Bill, I'm glad you did address about finding the common interest because, from Bridget's perspective, what I've been trying to do, and many of them know that who are in this meeting, of really pairing up, making a connection between an adult family home that's in their community. So the church is not far away, and the church to begin relationship building. But not with me making that happen, me just making that connection, and then they take it from there. And so, but I think that sometimes it's the challenge may be that once that first connection is made, is having the commitment of people who will go back again to again find that common denominator, like a team, because in Seahawks, we have the Seahawks here, Seattle Seahawks, because that on and the Mariners, many of all of our professional teams, but it's maybe my encouraging churches, groups, small groups that are willing to take on this task at my bidding of giving them suggestions like that. See, do they love Mariners? Take some Mariners flags or something that might really speak to them. And I agree, Nate, we're not, the whole idea is not to be Bible thumping and preaching at them. The whole purpose is just to engage. And if they want to become a part of what your church does and the congregation does, that will be their choice. Bill addressed that. That's really something that they have to find their place in. But at least we're rolling out that welcome mat. And we're saying we want to be a part of who you are.
Yeah, well, and let me go back to that again, because just to finish up that loop. But again, it's through those common interests, and there you could begin to find people. So, like, if somebody went to visit a home, for instance, and found a guy in one of your homes who was a big Seattle Mariner fan, and he didn't know any other Seattle Mariner fans, but you didn't have anybody on your visiting team who was a Seattle Mariner fan, well, you could go back and find a Seattle Mariner fan. What well, any of you could find a Seattle Mariner fan, and you could say, "Have we got a guy for you to meet, who never gets to talk to another Seattle Mariner fan?" And all of a sudden, the problem is not that this person has a disability; it's a problem they don't have, they have a deficit of Seattle Mariner stuff. And so, and the person who's a Seattle Mariner fan has a surplus of that and would be willing to share that. So you're getting people act living out of things that they feel more confident in and interested in and working together. The thing about, I think this is, and I'm going to send Jackie again. I apologize, but I really felt like I needed to get to know you guys and hear what some of your issues were before my launching off with Bill's selected five issues in this area of ministry. Because one of the key things is ministry in this area is kind of like If you had a sweater with one loose string and you say, well, we only have one disabled person here, you start pulling on that string, it weaves throughout the whole sweater. I mean, these challenges in this area arena bring up things that are part of the whole church. And so it's not just an issue of worship or religious ed or outreach or mission or building or whatever. It just weaves throughout it, which is one of the really blessings of it in a way, because it helps it to be, see how one, how interconnected things are and not how segregated things are and what it means to be part of the wider body or family. But I think one of the things there is going to be, if a congregation's wanting to do this, is having two or three people who begin to form their kind of own group and say, let's work on this together. Don't try to do it by yourself. I mean, Jesus sent people out two by two for a reason, so that, and begin to kind of build a team that develops what you'll see in the PowerPoint that I was sent you, that begins to say, how does this fit into our church's mission? Do we have this? Do we have the blessing of the leadership to participate in this? Is this something we're wanting to do as a church? We have the church behind us. Lots of times I hear people say, oh, we got great things going, but our pastor never helps. And that I think sometimes turns is are these some of these bigger churches that have but I think, how do you involving leadership is also crucial, but the pastor doesn't have to be the one to do it all. That's not what the church is. Especially in service like this, but to develop a team that develops its own goals, a sense of call about it, what they want to do, and set out a realistic kind of plan that has a number of steps. I don't know if any of you know in the person-centered planning world what's called the PATH process. Do you know the PATH process, Jackie?
No.
Or if you're parents, it's essentially a strategic planning tool for an individual for that can be used for growth in terms of what thinking about where you'd like to go, not what's wrong with you and what you want to fix, but where you'd like to go. I might be able to bring that with me and share that with some of you all there. But I think that the importance of this is if it's going to weave its way through the congregation in different ways and raise different issues, then you want this group who they can work together. It doesn't mean you have to meet every week. God forbid, individual action is important. I mean, one of my phrases is God so loved the world, he didn't send a committee. But to be able to do things, but then to come back to for support each other, to think of to feedback, and to also reflect upon why we're doing this, not just how, but why we're doing it and what we hope to be learning. And how we can continue to learn in that process. So it's not up to you to keep the fire burning, Jackie Kiesick. It's up to a pastor, a good pastor would say, it's not up to me for all of my congregation members to live out their Christian faith, but for us to support each other as a community in doing that. And I think there's the importance then of that small group getting to know some people with disabilities, and listening to their stories. And then the next thing that happens is trying to figure out ways for more people in the congregation to hear those stories. Not to hear what we're going to do, but to hear their life story, maybe hear their faith story, like what they've tried to do in the past or what they how God fits into their, you have to be develop a relationship first like that. But when you get to chance where you can get people to hear somebody else's story in varied ways, that's going to be what gives people the kind of vision and the kind of sense of, oh, we can help with, we can be part of that story, in meaningful ways, not in ways that change the world necessarily, but for somebody to find a community outside of a group home where they have people who feel like they care for them, that could change the world for them in radical ways. And I can tell you lots of people for whom that has happened.
Bill, thank you so very much. I know we're at the end of the hour. Be sure and send me all the links that we saw on the screen because I'll make sure everyone that you get that. Okay, and you can click on those
Send you the
wonderful
links. I'll
resources.
send you the PowerPoint.
Oh,
You
good,
can go
wonderful.
through
I will
it.
make sure.
You can go through it and say, all right, what do you have said here? I think you said something. Points. And I'd love to, and if you have questions about it, email me. And then there'll be time to address some of these things when we get there, when I get there in October.
Oh,
But
yeah. Looking forward to
the
that. Looking
kinds of
forward to
questions that you all are asking or dealing with are, you know, there's nothing unnormal about that stuff. And it's so, but it also shows a lot of commitment and some of you who've been willing to work on this for a long time, and that's really wonderful to see.
It is. Thank you, everyone, for attending today. I appreciate that, sir, very much, your faithfulness to the Beacon Church Collaborative and just being a part of what Bridge is wanting to do and trying to do to support you and to help you in every way possible. Bill, we look forward to October. Guys, it'll be a much deeper dive. It'll be a lot of interaction, group discussion. So mark October 17th and 18th, okay, for being there. So we're going to do a 2-day one this time. So
And if
anyway,
there's specific questions, like I said, get back to me because I've been around this for a long time, so I know a lot of where the resources are.
good,
I
wonderful.
want to say I don't know where the bodies are buried, but I know where the resources are who are
You do
doing
it.
good things.
Yeah,
And
please do.
I'm glad to. I love connecting people like that to things.
Oh, good, wonderful. And listen, if you have questions too, this will also help Bill in his preparation for October because we're just going to take what we started today and we're just going to do a deeper dive. So some of the questions, I know, Teresa, we may not have addressed them all, but please just know that you send him, he'll start to be building up his presentations. And this is, and you can see he's a guy who wants to make sure he's relevant to his audience. So we're gonna, you know what, we're gonna treat him with that. Yeah, we're
Well,
gonna make sure.
let me tell you what I'm hoping to do. The first session is the first one I'm going to do is comes out of a story that a conversation I had with a guy who used to be head of this Association for Theological Schools. We were having breakfast, and he talked about preaching at a friend of his church that had worked with group homes in the area for a long time. In fact, even had their own. And there are a whole bunch of people with disabilities who came to the service. And he said he got set at the pulpit that morning, got set up there, and looked at the pulpit, and he said, "Well, all the people of God finally showed up." And so the sermon is my talk is going to be, though, what happens if all the people of God showed up? What would we have had to do for that to happen, or hopefully had to do for that to happen? And then how that helps all of the people of God, not just the people who we're trying to invite in or to reach out to. And then the next day, we're going to try to do some stuff on the kind of core leadership skills and lessons, I think, that come out of this area of ministry that are good for working with everybody, not just with people with disabilities, but around building ministry, building communities, around dealing with grief and loss, just a variety of other kinds of things.
Okay, fantastic. All right, everyone, there we go. Bill, again, thank you very, very much for your time given, for great information. Appreciate it very much. I'll get everything to you and Bill gets it to me. Goodbye, everyone. A pleasure to have spent this hour with you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks so
Thank
much.
you.